Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff.
In this show, we're going to dive deep into flips, wholesales, holding rentals, and creatively structuring deals.
So that we can show you how you can achieve that lifestyle of freedom that you desire.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Chasing Freedom Show with Noah and Jeff. Today, I'm really excited. I've got my good buddy. I know we've been getting a lot of guests from the Maui Mastermind, but you guys, these are heavy hitters, all doing awesome things in real estate. And so we think that they bring a ton of value to the show and being able to share their experiences and everything like that. So today I've got Josiah Trowbridge, and his company is Windows of Heaven, and he does multifamily buys. You do single family buys as well, right?
Yes,
and you're
sir.
Doing them in a couple different states. You're in Memphis, Texas.
We're Ohio.
Ohio. One of your buddies behind me was distracting me, so I was like, I can see him back there. He's checking out the show. I'm just funny. Super excited to have you on, man. You're at 90 units now, which is insane. Like, and you still work a full-time job.
Dude, bunch of goobers back there.
They're jealous.
Sorry about that.
No, you're totally fine.
Yeah, exactly. Just crossed over, just closed on a duplex yesterday. Just kind of pick them up where they make sense. At 90 at this point, you nailed it. Primarily invest in Memphis, some in Ohio, some in Texas, live in Denver, and really trying to put the framework in place to start doing more local flips. So for me here in Denver, the Denver Metro, and then some spec builds, got some irons in the fire for that as well. So I'm also a house hacker, still do it. And, you know, all the things, man. So seeing what you guys got going on excites me. And I just love all the facets that you guys have. And I'm not going to lie, there's a lot about what's been going on in my head the last month. That is, how can I do what Jeff and Noah are doing up there in Boise? So it's fun.
The grass isn't always greener on the other side, man. I hear that you've done 90 units all while working a full-time job, and I could barely manage the 20-something, 27 units we have, and we're full-time in real estate. So I'm excited to dig into your story. If you don't mind, I'd love to hear your why. Like, why did you get into real estate, and why do you continue to push yourself through it? Because I can't even imagine the amount of discipline you have with your time and your schedule, being that you have the full-time career, and then you also are managing your portfolio, including acquiring more rentals and then different states, which means different contacts. Like, walk me through the why, and then let's eventually get to where you're at now.
Yeah. The why, it's so funny. I just love the name of your podcast, man, because that's a phrase that I've personally used. I've said it to my wife for years, chasing freedom, man. And, honestly, that's what I'm all about. I just don't like the system. I think that, I often use a harsh phrase, but it's tax cattle, man. That's kind of this idea behind put in 40 years of your life and then hope that you have enough money, that the stock market was good enough to you, that when you're in your 60s and your body isn't as good as it used to be, that you hope to still have decent health to go do things. And I think that's silly. And so for me, it's really been the pursuit of something different from that, and more time with my family, and love to travel, love to spend time with my family, love to play golf, love to go to the beach, love to do a lot of things that isn't work. And so that's what drives me. It really does. And so that's my why, to answer that question.
Yeah. I like that. You know what it reminds me of is, I feel like actually Brandon Turner said this when we were all with them. I think he said that, you know, it's like planning. It's the difference of planning to live to work or planning to work to live. And it's like, which one are you, which path are you on? And I'm with you, man. Like, I think sometimes, especially as men, we get so wrapped up in this idea of like our career has to be our life. And for some people that they don't have that choice. Your career is your life. But I'm with you. Yeah. I would rather have my family be my life. And then like my work just supports my lifestyle. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want it the other way around. I want to plan my work around the way we want to live. That's why we're out here chasing freedom and doing real estate, because we want that choice. We don't want that choice made for us. So
100%, man. You know, since Maui, being together out there, following each other on social media, you shared about what financial freedom looks like for you. And it's powerful, man, because I think people believe that they need to make millions and millions of dollars in order to change their life and have a different environment, more free time. And the reality is, and your story is very similar to mine. It's funny, kind of those numbers. But there's a lot of freedom that comes from, just a, you know, several thousand dollars a month that can come in passive income,
yeah,
and allows us to do a lot of things and live a very different life that's not bound by the 9 to 5. And it's exciting, man. And so I'm grateful for real estate for that reason. And you asked me kind of how I got started. I'm fortunate, man. I was born into a really great home with wonderful parents, and they always encourage really hard work. They have work ethic like nobody I know. But couple that with an entrepreneurial spirit that they both harbored. They were always running different businesses, mm-hmm, and doing different things. And they even gotten involved. They had even gotten involved in some real estate things for a time. But when I was in junior high, my dad encouraged me to read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I couldn't put it down. And from that point in time, man, like so many other people's story, I knew that real estate is what I wanted to do.
You started young. So junior high, you're like, man, I want to do real estate.
Well, at least I knew that about it for sure. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the thing is I made my first real estate investment purchase in 2014 here in Denver.
Okay.
And the Denver market is expensive. So that purchase, kind of a fun story. I've been excited about the opportunity to share sort of the creative way that I financed that deal, because I've listened to dang near every Bigger Pockets podcast, a lot of other real estate podcasts, and I've yet to encounter someone that has said that they did things the way that I did it. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of fun to share that. So anyway, 2014, I was married a few years, had always been telling my wife that this was what I wanted to do. So she knew that, she was prepared. We were married, I guess, 5.5 years before finally pulling the trigger on the first purchase. Kind of an easy one, a little bit of a softball. It was my grandmother's townhouse and she was moving out. And, so I had an in, there's no sugarcoating it. It was a blessing.
Yeah. But also you were prepared to take advantage of the opportunity. So I wouldn't downplay it by any means. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was still scary for me. Terrifying. At the time. Yeah. and committing to it. And so, one of the things in some of these higher price markets is you just are intimidated by how am I going to come up, you know, 25% of something that's a lot of money can be still a significant amount of money. So I had this idea that essentially that I implemented was I started chatting with my sister, who was very much in rental mode, just apartment living and renting. And I went to her and I said, hey, what if you co-sign on this loan with me, and I'll bring the down payment of this house, you co-sign on the loan, which makes you an owner occupant, which then qualified the purchase for just the minimum 3.5% down payment. Mm-hmm. So that went from I need tens of thousands of dollars to under $10,000 for this deal. And that was really friendly on the pocketbook,
yeah,
for me. My sister, the deal was I had her sign a contract and we said, hey, I own the property for all intents and purposes. I'll pay for repairs. I'll pay for renovations. I'll renovate this property, pay for all of it. I'll bring the down payment. You rent it for only what I'm paying on the mortgage, which for the time, this was 2014, that was dang near 50% of what she would have paid in rent for the same place. So the deal for her was dang, I would say is
a good deal for her.
As for me to pay half of what she would have otherwise been paying, yeah, for the place. And for me, it was, hey, I want the appreciation, the equity, and that you just acknowledge in writing that this is mine. Mm-hmm. And so, it worked out. couple years later, she wanted more space. And I said, let's go do it again. And that's when I bought my first actual single family detached home by the same method. And then I rented out the townhouse. And so pretty neat, man. I think it was pretty
savvy. That's very unique. Yeah. You know what I love about that I want to pull out, if you don't mind, is I think that the problem that a lot of people just trying to get into it or trying to do their first deal make is one, they think that they deserve the entire piece of the pie, right? So there's a little bit of greed that comes in. So for example, like with your sister, you created a win-win, very symbiotic relationship. It wasn't a parasitic relationship. You didn't say, hey, sister, you're going to help me out and do this. And then in exchange, you're also going to pay full market rent so I can cash flow. You said, no, I appreciate you being willing to help me. In exchange of value, you're going to get something that is far below market rent. So you're going to save a couple hundred dollars a month. She had no intention. She didn't want to buy, right? That's obviously why she was willing to do this with you. So it was like, it was a total win-win instead of Josiah wins and his sister loses or the other way around. And yeah. I think that in the beginning, it's important to remember one of the formulas for success that I was taught very early on was like relationship capital plus intellectual capital equals financial capital. So relationship, you took good care of your sister. Intellectual capital, you studied and you understood how real estate worked, at least at some fundamental level to get started. And then in exchange, you created financial capital, right? Because I'm sure that your townhome appreciated and then eventually you started cash flowing on it.
Absolutely. That's exactly right, man. And here in Denver, it was, you know, there's always a little bit of uncertainty about all of this stuff.
Right.
And that changes with time for me, I'm sure with you, as we just see the power of real estate and how it works. But there was no guarantees that it was going to appreciate, but I was pretty sure it would. And for me, you know, the idea has always been, and I've said this to my wife a million times, so she probably rolls her eyes at it, but if you can just get a property in your name, and if you can have a tenant helping you pay that mortgage, even if it's not creating cash flow and changing your life today, the power that will have on your retirement, you know, down the road is incredible, because that mortgage is getting paid, that property is being purchased, mm-hmm. and not by you. And so early on, to be honest with you, that was really the only thing I had in mind, because I wasn't thinking big enough, admittedly. But really, it was just to bolster that retirement when I'm age 65.
Yep.
And in Denver, it's so expensive here. I didn't really see how this has changed. But at the time, I didn't see how I was going to scale very much because of how cost prohibitive things were. So,
right.
So originally, the idea was, hey, I'd like to have like 10 properties here in Colorado so that when I'm 65, hopefully most of them are paid for and I can have my retirement largely be paid for by the rents coming from these properties that are owned. And didn't take too long for me to realize that I wanted a lot more than that. I didn't want to wait till I was 65 to retire. So thus began sort of the next phase. And I don't know if you had any.
Yeah, no, let's go into it. Yeah. So you got your townhome, then you got a single family, and then you probably realized that this was going to take longer to scale in Colorado because of the purchase price. So then what happened next?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I'm just going, you know, somehow, some way, there's people out there who are just like me, don't come from any money, who have bootstrapped their way into building a real estate empire.
Mm-hmm.
This was before I ever got acquainted with Bigger Pockets, but I just started going, I'm going to figure out how to be one of those people. And I just made up my mind. I said, I want to build a real estate portfolio that will free me from the 9 to 5. And so that became the driver for me. And for me, on my modest income, I do have a full-time job and did at the time, but it's a slow build, especially when you're talking about the median home prices being multiple hundreds of thousands
right.
of dollars, challenging. So, I was at a baseball game here in Colorado Rockies game with a friend, and he happened to invite another friend, asked me if he could drag another guy along. And, he happened to be a guy that had shifted his focus over to Memphis. I didn't even know he was in real estate, but he started encouraging me with looking into Memphis because it was a really strong cash flow market. And for me, cash flow became really the name of the game. That had been what I realized. It's all about what kind of monthly income can I generate mm-hmm. to replace my day job income and live a different life. And so cash flow became the goal. Colorado is great for appreciating. But I heard this and man, that just set a fire in me. And I think I booked a flight just maybe a day or two later. Told my wife I was going to go figure out Memphis and flew out there and lined up meetings with property management companies and realtors. And I knew that if I was going to invest out of state, I needed to have a solid relationship with a management company. So that became my focus. I met with a bunch and settled on one that today still proves me right. And just have an awesome relationship with that team. And I tell you that if you're thinking about investing out of state, property management is everything. I mean, that it's not everything, but it's
dang near close. We've learned this the hard way. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've learned this the hard way.
It's the biggest piece. And so really do your due diligence there. And I feel that I did that. I interviewed a bunch and settled on the one that I felt was the best. And they've helped me a lot.
Do you want to spend maybe like a minute to 2 minutes talking about some of the due diligence pieces that helped you to identify a good property manager versus a bad property manager?
Yeah, that sounds good. I think that I would start with, I'm a very relational person. Mm-hmm. It's maybe one of the traits that God gave me that I feel like is a strength, just connecting with people, always leading with kindness and just trying to build and develop strong relationships, friendships mm-hmm. that then become, it's harder for somebody to want to take advantage of you or hurt you if you're friends with them. And so, I looked for that personally with the people that I was talking to and interviewing and the group that I settled on. I just can't say enough about them and how I felt like that was reciprocated, that their core values were just integrity mm-hmm. And really being just honest and wanting to take care of their clients. And so that was one of the biggest due diligence pieces for me, I would say. They had a decent amount of properties that they were managing, which said something to me. And just meeting with them, they seemed to have the pieces in place. They offered the ability to have rehabs happen in-house. So they had a lot of contractor relationships.
That was huge. Yeah.
I encourage that. I encourage you to look for that. You got to be in a big enough market, I think, for some of those management companies to have that ability. But these guys did. So that was a piece. Somebody dedicated to the books and accounting, they had that. That was another element to what I was looking for. And then the owners were just go-getters and they have ambition to grow and scale. And so I told them I had that same ambition and that was going to work well together because that was going to mean that they would want to take care of me. So that as I added that they were going to want to keep working with me. So I hope that's sufficient, but I would tell you that that's kind of the criteria I looked for. Bookkeeping, contractor relationships, a desire to grow, and then just that kindness and relationship element that they exhibited.
Yeah. I think those are great metrics. We were drawn to our property management company in South Bend originally for the same reasons. One, the relationship felt very natural and personal. Two, the ability to go in and make repairs and the connections to be able to do that. I think that's something that is probably underlooked frequently for people looking to go invest out of state. For example, like you, for your own personal market where you own a couple of those properties in Denver, you probably know streets, you know parks, you know schools, you know the score ratings, you know the good areas and the bad areas without having to do any research. When you're not from the area, you don't know any of that.
Right.
Like we dodged a huge bullet in South Bend. Somebody sent us a package of like 17 single family homes and duplexes all mixed in for $342,000. I was like, it's the deal of a lifetime. It's a freaking steal. We're going to make a home run hit on this. Because we understood the value of the properties we had already bought, which the average like single family home was worth like 80 grand. And like a duplex would be like 100, and then like a fourplex would be like 125 to 150, depending on condition. So we're like, holy crap, we're getting a steal. Then we actually flew into South Bend because we were checking up on our stuff already. We're like, might as well go check out the portfolio. It was in a war zone. Literally looked like, if you've ever played like Call of Duty, and I don't play a lot of video games, but literally looked like when you go like in Call of Duty and you go like shoot, you know, play multiplayer games, whatever, and you're in like torn down houses. That's what it looked like. I was like, I wouldn't buy, you couldn't actually give me money to take these properties. So somebody that has the relationships, knows the area, is hungry and ready to grow, I think that's important. Appreciate you sharing
huge.
That'll help a lot of people. So
yeah, well, and just piggyback on what you're saying, that's a huge piece that I did not say, and you couldn't be more right. I mean, they're local, born and raised, grew up in the area, and just a wealth of knowledge about the city that they live in and operate in, and super valuable. I leaned on them heavily for advice on various acquisitions.
Yeah. Just,
hey, is this worth buying? Is this area solid? And if you can get that from your management company, that's just, it's a big deal.
It's huge. It's really helpful. Yeah. And the accounting side is really big, because I think that's probably one of our biggest lagging pieces right now is like, if you don't know your metrics, how do you know how to be better? How do you know if you have an underperforming asset? How do you know if you're hitting market rents? You don't until you have the accounting piece in place. So,
garbage in, garbage out, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I appreciate you sharing this. So tell us how you got to where you're at now. So, I mean, we understood you started looking in other states. What were some of the first things you picked up? What type of properties?
Yeah. So, single family homes was the start out there. Went from, I guess it's important to say, the revelation of what I'll call for instance, Memphis, what at the time anyway, I'll call it a cash flowing market, where how I would define Denver as an appreciating market, where you might even in Denver have a hard time having a property that you buy cover your mortgage cost, assuming you have a mortgage on it.
Yeah.
Even though our rents are super high, the cost of the property is also super high. So they're not typically super high cash flowing deals. So I made this mental shift saying, you know, the appreciation game was for that idea that I'll bolster. Was no, this is what I need now to change my life now. Mm-hmm. And so when I made that change, then it was, hey, I'm even going to be willing to part with what I have here in Denver, which at the time was three properties. So I got my wife on board with this, just shared kind of where my head was at and what I was doing, and went ahead and listed that townhome actually is the first thing I listed, and super blessed, just crushed that as far as from what I paid for it in 2014. I sold it in the fall of 2018. So 4 years later, I think I turned about $100 in profit off of that. And I did my first ever 1031 exchange. I had all those proceeds go into an escrow fund, and I didn't even know where they were going to go. So I went on a trip to Memphis and said, you know, change happened. And so I flew out there on a trip, just house shopping, literally looking for, there was, you know, with a 1031 exchange, there's a little bit of a, well, there's a deadline on it. So you're kind of forced a little bit, which is beautiful in some ways, because it's just kind of a fire under you that's
makes
just
you going, take action. Yeah.
Yeah. Forces that action. So, so that's what I did. I went out there and I went under contract, found three different properties that I liked. They satisfied the 1031 exchange and thus began out of state investing for me. And those three properties I still have today. That was 3 years ago, fall of 2018 was when I made this shift and started taking this thing more seriously and saying, hey, I want to start doing this. And so your question was, what am I buying out there? How am I doing it? I took equity from what I had in that that first deal here and bought those there. And then I've been burring. And between the burr method and a HELOC on my personal residence, my wife and I we bought our first home in Denver back in 2010, which was shortly after the Great Recession and everything else. And so you can imagine, super blessed. Our home appreciated like crazy, and that enabled us to have a really significant HELOC. For those who don't know, home equity line of credit, pretty neat thing. When you have one of those, you really are only charged by the bank what portion of the money that you're using at the time. So you kind of get to become your own bank. And so it was a combination of getting started in Memphis with the sale of that first investment property of mine, and then leveraging my HELOC on my own home to start buying. And so it's just been a process of trying to max out the burr method. And, and I know that your listeners are probably familiar with that, but doing that, buy, rehab, rent it, refinance, and repeat, man. And it's been fun. But I guess hit me with another question.
Yeah, I like that, man.
I'm going to start rambling.
Well, why don't you take us through your most recent deal. So I think you said you just bought a duplex. Is that right?
Just bought a duplex.
Take us through that. Like, where is it at? What were the numbers? How much cash out of your own pocket did you have to put in? And what's the end goal with this property?
Perfect. So yeah, I'll try to make that one quick. Closed on it, got a good deal. One of the relationships out in Memphis that I've made over the years brought it to me and said, hey, you know, I think that you should consider this one. Didn't take but, you know, 15 minutes of just kind of analyzing and going, yep, absolutely, I want to figure this one out. And so I ended up actually buying it for $50,000, 50.
Wow.
It's a duplex. It almost, one side.
It would almost scare me a little bit, because I'm like, now I know that sometimes low prices aren't a good thing, because I'm like, low prices sometimes mean you're in like the ghetto or a war zone. Right. So, yeah. Who brought you this? One of your agents out there?
One of my agents. Yeah.
Off market or on market?
This was a relationship that he had with the seller, but they asked him to list it for him. And he and I have a good enough relationship that he typically calls me first, which I'm really blessed. He's a rock star out there. It technically was an MLS deal, but one that I had first crack on, and an advocate in my corner who was the listing agent basically by my side to help make it happen. Yeah. And then I want to kind of speak to what you said. It is totally true. One of the only reasons why this home is $50,000 is because the zip code is not a great zip code, but Memphis is an environment where it's my management company out in Memphis that gave me this phrase, but they said Memphis is like a checkerboard. You can have a really great area right next to a really terrible area right next to a really great area. And it's just crazy. So you really have to know it really well. And the zip code is not an ideal zip code, but the street itself, it's on a clean street. You look at the gutters, there's no trash in the gutters. There's two churches that sit really close by, and everything just looks clean and well kept. Mm-hmm. And so it's crazy how that can be the difference of just going, if there was trouble, you'd kind of see evidence of it. Right. So I feel good about this one. And we're inheriting a tenant on the one side. It's a $550 rent from the one tenant, and the other side is vacant, which gives us a chance to put a little bit of work into that side and make it a little nicer.
A little spit and, shine.
Exactly. And then hopefully get the rents at market where they should be for that. So
what would be market rents for that duplex?
So the tenant we inherited, like I mentioned, is $550. And I think the other side, once we're able to put in new flooring, new paint, clean it up, I bet we'll see $600 to $650. So another $100 maybe over what we're getting on the existing side. So when you combine that, we're talking about potentially $1,200 to $1,300 in gross rent.
What do you think total rehab is going to be?
On that side, that's what I'm excited about this property. I think it's a home run, man, because I really think that we'll pay, I don't know, $12,000 renovating wow. the right side is all. Just new flooring, new paint. It's a small duplex, yeah. so there's not a lot of square footage to touch. And then put in some new appliances and some new countertops and paint the cabinets. And Bob's your uncle, man. So
man, I like this. And so what's interesting about this is so often we hear that like the 1% rule is not like a thing anymore. And this is what this deal that you have right now is quite a ways over the 1% rule. It's actually closer ways. To it's closer. Two. Is it even over two? Yeah, it's actually
closer. Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's a little over two. A little fully over, stabilized. Yeah. Yeah.
Gross.
Yeah. Yep.
So yeah, almost. Yeah, you're right. It is. And so, yeah, when he sent it my way, that's why I say it was took me very little time to go, yep, sign me up. So, and these don't come that way. It's slowed down.
Yeah.
I don't find these all the time, but it's a blessing when you can. They're still out there. They're still
they
out
are.
There.
They're definitely out there. So, they're out there for the yeah. people that are looking and constantly taking action.
Right.
I think that's the difference, especially for someone listening and being like, well, I can't find no deals like that. Well, like my first question to you would be like, how often are you looking?
Yep.
How many people are you calling? How many agents did you talk to? And that's actually, okay, so that's actually what I want to go into next with you. How did you start this relationship with this agent? I think where most people go wrong with these types of relationships they're trying to start is it's like one-sided. So like one person's just trying to take and How did you give value to the agent where he now treats you as a loyal customer and wants to bring you deals first?
Right. I'll lead again with just that relationship. He's a good guy, and just phone call conversations are, you just try to get to know somebody and build a friendship. That's I can't overstate how important that's been for me. Mm-hmm. It may not be for everybody, but it's huge. I mean, I want to know how he's doing and genuinely learn to care about somebody and all that. So that's a big piece. I focused on building a relationship with this guy because he's one of the few real estate agents out there that is really investor minded mm-hmm. and focused. Most listing agents are concerned with buying and selling to home owner occupants. And that's a whole different world. And so this guy adds a lot of value to me by understanding how investors think, how mm-hmm. I think, what we're looking for, and then taking the time to research further. And he does that. He spends a lot of time researching and acquiring the mind of an investor and putting in the effort to do it. So developing the strong relationship with him was, I know in 2019, he told me that I bought more properties from him than any of his other clients. So, you know, that puts me on a, just by naturally something where, okay, I'm technically his best client. Yeah. So that goes a long way. And then I know it's been said a million times. Brandon Turner talks about it all the time, or has over the years with the podcast there and Bigger Pockets, but just making good on what you say you're going to do.
Yep.
Because if I jerked him around and, you know, went under contract on something, but didn't buy it or did that at once, maybe he'd overlook that. But if you start doing that sort of thing a bunch, it's hard for probably somebody on his yeah. end to be excited about things. So
yeah, your repetition matters a lot.
Yeah, repetition and just being true to your word and mm-hmm. making sure that you got your ducks in a row.
Yep.
And that you're going to make good on it. So one of the big things I wanted to talk about, kind of transition into, was for me just thinking about how real estate has changed your life. It's changed mine. And for other people listening, I said about that first property that I bought, I wasn't sure, you know, there's never any guarantees when you're investing.
Yep.
But as time goes on, the thing that real estate gives me more confidence than any other investment out there. And sure enough, that first property that I bought went, just the market just continued to ascend upward.
Yeah.
And I was able to do a lot of damage with the equity out of that. And so one of the properties that kind of on y'all's boxes to check to be prepared to have this talk with you today was just, what was a property that you wanted to kind of hone in on? And the one that I'd really like to share about nothing overtly special about it other than the timing of when I bought it. It was a property that was sent to me in a very similar fashion as the one I just closed mm-hmm. on the other day, where the same guy, same real estate agent that I have a good relationship with, back in March of 2020, which if that has a rings a bell, it's when
sure does. Yeah.
All kinds of hell was breaking loose.
The world was on fire.
Yeah. I have a lot of strong opinions about all of that, but I'll spare you that in the podcast. But it was kind of a scary time. But this deal was presented to me before any of that started taking place here in the States. And it sounded good. Just a single family home in a really great area, mm-hmm. really great neighborhood. And I believed that it was a really good purchase. Didn't need much work. And the asking price was $75,000. There were a bunch of different people interested, and I just went ahead and offered asking. And sure enough, I got it, and I'm under contract on it when all of the country starts shutting down. And in that time, it was a significant amount of money for me to be committed to, and it just was, I think I'm not alone, that it was very uncertain for me.
Scary.
And I was nervous. I was nervous about it. And I just had this really stressful couple of weeks where every day went by, I'm closer to when I got to pony up the cash and make this purchase. And there was a lot of wavering about whether or not I should back out and just sit on that wow. cash, right? And like be safe and feel better about the situation by having money not tied up in that house, but that could maybe float me and my family if the whole world goes to
right, yeah,
100%. To you know what. So it made me nervous, but I just knew that it was a good purchase, and I stuck with it and made the buy. And the fun thing about that, as far as burr conversations go, is that bought it for $75,000 right at the front end of the COVID stuff unfolding and all of the people not working and everything else that came with it. And just 7 months later, fast forward, I had seasoned it. It had been more than 6 months since I bought it. I was able to go ahead and do a refinance to put a loan on it per the Burr method. Mm-hmm. And the property appraised for $115,000.
Gosh. And you didn't really put much into rehab, right?
I put nothing into rehab on this particular property, and got a loan. The bank approved, 75% of the appraised value. And not only did I get all of my $75,000 back, but I also got an additional $10,000 in just capital to go do other things with. So I think the moral of the story, why I wanted to share that, is just the power of real estate. Mm-hmm. Because just to encourage people that people need homes, and this is a clean, nice house that I have a good tenant in who pays on time. And he's told my management company he loves the house and he loves living there. And there's just an environment where people need a place to live, and that's not going to change. Your real estate provides these kinds of opportunities. And so kind of pushed through the fear and was blessed on the other side of it to have something. That house, that was last fall that I finally did that loan. And today I think it's worth $140,000.
Yeah, right.
So
I love that you shared that story. I think that we all face fear going into real estate, right? Like there's, and I also think too, it doesn't change. Like I would say, like, I have a whole lot less fear buying like single family home flips. Like today I've got one of our team members going to walk a property. I probably won't ever set foot in it, and we're going to waive all of our contingencies. Now, would I have ever done that on my first like 10 deals? No, never. But I'm at the right point now where I'm like, within reason, there's only so many things that can go wrong at a property and I can fix them, right? Like we can make it right. So, but facing the fear is like the fundamental foundation to becoming successful in anything. If you run right away from it, like if you would have ran away from this deal, you would have missed out on this opportunity, this story, this experience, being able to give this person a great home to live in. You would have missed out on all of that had you let fear dictate your decision.
Right.
So I think it's important to sometimes like try to remove the emotion and say, okay, look, hey, I know that there's a lot of stuff going on, but I need to take advantage of this opportunity. And then also too, like looking at the worst case scenario. Okay, what's the worst that could have happened? Could have not appraised. You would have had to leave your money in the deal, but you probably still would have cash flowed because your family had lived off the cash flow. Probably would you have had to cut some expenses? I mean, maybe no more Starbucks for, you know, a little while, but other than that, you'd probably find a way to make it work. That time was scary.
You're absolutely right. And that conversation in the walls of my home with my wife about following through on the deal was, I vividly remember saying this to her. I said, you know, if truly all of this stuff really goes just crazy, I mean, I had crazy thoughts that shouldn't have been in my head about entering into the next Great Depression at that time, you know, and what's going to happen with all of this and all kinds of thoughts. And I remember saying to my wife, you know, with this particular purchase, even if everything else goes south, we can sell what we have here in Denver and go live in this house in Memphis if that's what we have to do. You know?
Totally could.
And that was, those were the conversations I had with myself as well as with my wife, but about just going like, no, we're going to do this. Mm-hmm. And man, what a cool thing. It's probably my favorite real estate experience to this point of just knowing how dang near crippled I was at the time, but just saying no, like pushing through that and what a blessing it is to have done so.
Fear is a powerful guide. How would you say that? Fear is a powerful guide guiding you down the wrong path, right? There are some fear is good. Some fear will keep you safe and help you make healthy decisions. I had bought a property the same time as you during March of 2020. And I remember like walking up and down the street of that property and being like, I'm the dumbest person on this whole block. Like there's literally no one that has paid this much for property. But I knew it was still a deal, right? I ended up buying it. Same thing. I faced my fear with the full intention that I was going to lose every single dollar I put into this property. And then now today that property has like $175,000 of equity in it. So it's interesting, right? And I'm not going to say that it always turns out like that. I'm sure that there are people that were caught in the other end of it. I think just planning, having contingencies, having backup plans, having multiple exits is the way to go about it. But we have to face our fears at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely.
Well, cool. Hey, so let's to wrap up the end of the show. What I'd like to have you share is maybe any type of advice you've ever gotten inside of real estate or business or whatever that has tremendously helped you, and then any books you recommend and any podcasts you recommend.
Okay. Advice in real estate. I think it's Mark Ferguson, who's a Colorado guy like myself, who's far more successful than I am. But I follow him on social media. And one of the things I remember him posting was just the simple thing that said, appreciation happens. And so that's what's so cool about real estate is it pays you in so many different ways, and you can make a case for buying a property that doesn't even cash flow you a penny. If you can just cover the expenses and have somebody help pay down a mortgage on it, how much further ahead you're going to be than somebody that's just doing what droves of other people are doing by praying and hoping that their 401k is going to somehow multiply to the extent to make their life comfortable for them in retirement. So anyway, that I always keep that in the forefront of my mind because I've seen it, I've experienced it. Some of these stories I shared about my experience have proved that appreciation in housing happens. It's really neat. Good advice, you know. Well, I'll tell you what, you challenged me when we were in Hawaii. I guess what was closer to 2 months ago now, but I'm trying to get my ducks in a row and just figure out how to pull a Noah and really go all in. And so that's what I'm working at right now. And I believe that there's power in that, and just, you don't have any choice but to to succeed when you go in all in on something. And I've been blessed. I've got a family at my day job that I, these guys that I work with, the knucklehead that was in the window back there is one of those guys that I get to work with in my day job. But he went all in on this business, and he's been very successful as a result. And I see what you're doing. So just committing, man, being passionate and committing, and don't quit. I've taken my lumps. We didn't get into some of those. But I have some what you could call horror stories that I've survived, and man, the lessons I've learned from it are invaluable. And I know it's cliche to say, but I wouldn't change it.
Like, yeah,
I wouldn't change it. I learned so much from the things that went wrong that I'm blessed. So not giving up, going all in, committing. Books that I've read, man, I love Brandon Turner's books. I just love the way that he presents stuff.
It makes it simple.
He does. I've read all of his. But Rich Dad, Poor Dad,
that's a good one.
That's my end all be all, man. That's what changed and made me think the way that I think. And he did that through that book. So
I like that.
Yeah. So I'm enjoying your podcast, dude. I love
what you.
You and Jeff got going on, and been listening to that. Fun hearing Heather the other day. And
You know, one thing I wanted to share based off what you just said, and we don't get super spiritual or religious very often, but I think that there's also an aspect to, we are given certain gifts in life, whether you want to believe that that's from a universe or God or whatever it may be. I think we owe it to the world, to the other people who aspire to be like us or to our families, to maximize those gifts, right? So like you're talking about, you know, what are the next steps for you and how far are you going to take this real estate career and going all in? I just want to say, like, I think that you owe it to everybody around yourself to do it.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome, man.
So,
of all the amazing conversations I had in Hawaii, it was the last night of our mastermind around a campfire night that you said almost that to me at that point in time. And, I kind of hate you for it, but,
now you have the pressure
going away, man. And, it's driving me, and I'm excited because that's the plan. So,
well, I'm excited, man. We're going to have, I think you and I will have a lot more opportunity to dive deeper into that. And, I'm excited to be a part of that journey with you. I think we're going to do like a weekly or biweekly meetup, me and you and a couple other guys, right?
Yeah.
And talk about real estate and I'll push each other. So that'll be really fun, man. I'm looking forward to it. You're a genuinely good guy. I'm excited for my guests to hear this show because everything you share is very real. You're also a little too humble. So like, dude, you've built a massive portfolio. You've done an awesome job in real estate. You've done it all with limited time and while growing and raising your family. And so like, if you guys are listening, like Josiah's advice is tangible stuff that you can take and go apply to your real estate, your either your real estate business if you have it, or to go build a real estate business if you don't. And I just appreciate everything you've shared, man. I appreciate you opening up and being vulnerable and talking about things and where you want to go. How do the guests get a hold of you? Because I'm sure that people are going to want to reach out, and I encourage them too, because you're such a nice dude. I know you're going to take the time to help.
Yeah. Well, awesome, man. Yeah. That just helping, just to speak to that briefly, that's something, that I'm passionate about. That's kind of what this thing is really becoming about. It's meeting with people that hear what I'm doing and see what I'm doing. And I'm being diligent to take the time when asked to sit down and share. And so that's a passion of mine. So I welcome people to reach out to me. I am no rock star. I'm just committed. I'm not going to quit. That's all I'll tell you. But Instagram, I'm on Instagram. It's, my name, it's just my initials, JD, followed by my last name, Trowbridge. So JD Trowbridge, that's my Instagram handle. And then welcome people to email me, man, that's my first initial J, followed by my last name, Trowbridge. And that's at windowsofheavenre.com.
Okay, cool, man.
So, windowsofheavenre.com. J Trowbridge. That's the front of it. And yeah, feel free to reach out. If I hear from you, I'll respond. For
awesome.
Sure.
So, well, guys, if you're listening, I definitely encourage you to get over the fear of talking to, you know, high level players in this game. Call them up. They're willing to talk. They're willing to help. Josiah is definitely one of those guys. Don't miss your opportunity if you've listened to this show this far. and you like the show, please go ahead and leave a review for us. And Josiah, I appreciate you so much coming on, man. I'm looking forward to talking to you more in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I just got to say, because I got to say it before the show, before we were live, but you and Jeff, what you guys are doing is just awesome, and so appreciate you. I think you got an awesome podcast happening. Everything else you're doing and just who you guys are, it's genuine, and that's just so tangible through everything. And so I'm honored, I'm humbled to be on here with you, and look forward to getting to work with you guys for a long time.
That made my day, man. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah. You gave me goosebumps.
I meant every word, man. I'm excited.
You Thank guys you, brother.
Are crushing it.
Cool, man. Well, I'm sure I'll probably end up talking to you next week then. So we'll Sounds talk great. Soon. Okay. Thanks, Sounds dude. Great. Bye.
Goodbye.
All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff.
Please subscribe to our YouTube channel in the show notes below. And if you ever want to get a hold of us, feel free to do it via our Instagrams. You can also follow us for our funny content on TikTok.